The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, after a busy few weeks of nominating presidential candidates, which is only three so far, the Dáil has returned, and one thing Ceann Comhairle Verona Murphy is calling for is action on threat and abuse of politicians. And not forgetting about the budget on the horizon, with an overall package worth an extra $9.4 billion coming our way. But will that include cutting the VAT rate down to 9% for hospitality businesses, or a cost of living package that the Labour Party leader Ivana Bacic is calling for? Well, for more on that, Minister for Public Expenditure Pascal Donohue joins me now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about what the Central Bank has been warning you overnight. You need more tax if you want to do what you want to do.
And I take on board very much what the Central Bank are proposing and their need for care regarding our public finances. I believe I have demonstrated that in recent years by the scale of the budget surplus that we are running. And as we move into next year, there will be a number of moves that are taking place that will lead to a broader tax base within our country. Two in particular. Firstly, we will be making further changes with regard to carbon taxation. Secondly, the rate of PRSI within our economy will be going up to help fund our auto enrolment system and better pensions in the future. And finally, the tax package that we are bringing forward is created by the kind of income growth that we are seeing taking place within our economy.
You're assuming an ongoing income growth.
I am. And the reason for that is that if I look at the forecast, not only the Central Bank have prepared, but the forecast that my own department are preparing at the moment, despite all, we expect to see our economy grow next year again. And if we look at the rate of growth within our economy this year so far, we've seen a rate of growth just above 3% within our own domestic economy. And for that reason, it gives me confidence that a rate of economic growth that is driven by having 2.8 million people at work will continue into next year. I believe it will subdue after that. But at least for next year, again, it looks like a reasonable performance.
But if you make ongoing commitments that require tax revenue, when the income goes down, you have to find another way of raising that money. So anything you do now that has knock-on effects, for example, if you take a typical social welfare package, that is a forever commitment. I mean, you're never going to cut social welfare. And in fact, you're probably going to have to raise it, elevate it with an increasing cost of living. So once you make those commitments, you're stuck with trying to find the money for them.
Indeed. And we deal with that in two ways. The first one is by running budget surpluses. So if we ever got to a point where our tax revenue came down sharply or we saw something happen within our economy, the first line of absorption of that happening is a budget surplus. And we already will have by the end of this year between 13 to 15 billion euros set aside in a fund to help us deal with that risk in the future. We could put more money into it next year. And secondly, then, we need to adjust and change and pull down the rate of current spending growth within our economy. It has been high over the last 2 years in particular because inflation was high. Inflation has now come down. And then I know we're going to get onto a discussion now regarding cost of living. I expect we will do so. But as inflation comes down, we do have to bring the rate of day-to-day spending in our economy down as well.
Now, the question of a cost of living package, which in the opening clip we played of you in our billboard, we played you saying, no, that won't be happening. And yet we have ongoing calls for a cost of living package from the likes of Ivana Bacic, the leader of the Labour Party. Is there scope for targeted measures that might offer a cost of living package to some, but not to all?
So we will be bringing forward targeted measures. And I absolutely understand for so many of your listeners at the moment, the cost of living continues to be a challenge. I'm very much aware what is happening, for example, with regard to the price of food and challenges that many are facing there. But I have to make the argument regarding why we should not repeat what we have done in recent years. The Central Bank this morning have been very, very clear regarding the risks of what we are alone doing at the moment, let alone the risk of going any further. And secondly, if I would just ask your listeners to be aware, which I know they are, of all of the risks that are taking place around us at the moment, we face a choice. Do we want to spend the money that's available to us in building more homes, investing in our future, investing in water, investing in making sure we safer and better energy in the future? Or do we want to repeat one-off measures? And I would be making the argument that we need to prioritise investment now, and we need to prioritise spending on things such as our schools, such as education, that give us a better chance of trying to keep Ireland safe in the years ahead.
When we talk about food inflation, has the government been able to get to the bottom of why it should happen?
Well, we are all over the world at the moment seeing...
I know that cocoa, for example, and coffee, those are commodities which on the world market are going up. But at home, we have dairy, we have meat, we produce these ourselves. The farmers have had a good year, but the prices they get are certainly not reflective of what's happening in the supermarkets.
So indeed, so I was about to make the point, and then you did indicate it, that for much of what happens with food inflation, much though not all, it is driven by what is happening in the price of food across the world. But as you correctly said, here in Ireland, because of the strength of our farming sector, we do have more of an influence on the price of food within our economy than could be elsewhere. And while farmers may have had a reasonably good this year, when it comes to tillage, they haven't. And in many other years, they have faced real challenges. And the nature of farming at times is you may have a particular good year within this year, but you could have many, many difficult years around it. Now, in terms of the issue you've raised there regarding what is happening with food price inflation, of course, we do have a regulator and a body now that we've put in place to look at these issues and look at what happens within our retailers. But from a budget point of view, what myself and Minister Jack Chambers will be focused on is how we can bring forward more targeted measures, which I believe is a really necessary case to do now.
But the idea of a two-tier child benefit, that has been ruled out?
So Minister Derek Cleary has said that he believes there's other measures that we need to consider that could play a role in meeting the same aim. And the background for what Dara has said is we have other payments within our social welfare system that are very targeted and how we can help with child poverty. And the Taoiseach and Tánaiste have said that's something we want to make more progress on. And it's not at all clear cut that if we were to move ahead with an additional tier of child benefit, that it would deliver more as opposed to going down a more highly targeted route. But all of this is being considered at the moment. And Minister Cleary and Minister Chambers who are looking at now what are the measures that we will include in the budget.
Now, we had a reduction in third level fees that one presumes is not going to be maintained.
So these decisions are being currently made at the moment, Pat. And I don't mean to either frustrate you or your listeners.
Well,
for a single
moment. I'm trying to get some clue as to what might be ahead for the third level students. Because if you look at what we charge here, the registration fee, so-called, of €3,000, which is the nominal, then it was reduced. And there's talk of it maybe being reduced again, but not by as much. It might be €500. When you look at it objectively and compare it to others, including our nearest neighbour, it's a relatively low fee. Is that pandering to some lobby group to actually drop it at all? Because the big cost of going to college is really accommodation.
So it may well be low in comparison to the UK, but for many of our families, many students at the moment, the registration fee is an issue and adds to the challenges with regard to going to college, particularly at a moment which I do know getting accommodation for students.
But isn't that the real problem?
Hard.
And even when
yes,
you get college accommodation, when
indeed,
it's available, it's not cheap.
But this is why we have projects underway now in many of our different universities at the moment to deliver more student accommodation. And it's work that Simon Harris began. It's work now that James Lawless is continuing, where we're both building and through our universities building additional student accommodation at the moment. Just to answer your question in relation to student fees, we are very much aware of the importance of that as an issue. But all of this is part of the budget process. And on October the 7th, we will be communicating what we are doing. We will be looking at what measures we can put in place that will make a difference. But we do have to move to measures that are capable of making a more permanent and a more sustainable difference to the cost of going to college. And this is why the issue of accommodation and indeed ensuring the quality of our higher and further education in Ireland.
I know there have been changes in the rules for the building of college accommodation, the idea that you'd have more communal spaces rather than maybe en-suite treatment, and therefore that en-suite treatment of the students justifying maybe high prices. But and the prices are high, even for the college-owned accommodations. It's not that they provide them at any kind of a subsidy to the students. But there's a danger that you build this lower standard accommodation and it still is damnably expensive.
So we're very much aware of that. And with respect, we're trying to avoid it being in any way lower standard. But what we are trying to do is move to something that has more uniform standards. And by having more uniform standards, try to take some of the cost out of this accommodation being built in the first place, which in turn should influence its affordability. But there's no way over time we're going to be able to improve affordability if we don't improve supply. There's no example that I'm aware of in which we approve the affordability of something without also improving the supply of it. And that's why the work that James Lawless, our Minister for Higher and Further Education, has underway, building on the work that Simon Harris did when it comes to the availability of accommodation, is so essential.
Our listeners are very engaged by this conversation. Can you ask the Minister, will there be funding put into the school transport system? Thousands of children refused and still waiting on tickets this year as services continue to fall short. The 2023 school transport report promised expanded services to 100,000 more children by 2030, and they're a long way off that mark going by this year's fiasco. That's from Laura Malloy.
So the majority of our students and families who do depend and do really need school transport, particularly outside of our large cities, to be provided to them by the state, do access it. But it is the case, and I'm sure your listener Laura is affected by it, that it doesn't always work out in the way we want for a number of students and their families.
Is it money, or is it the availability of drivers or various rules and regulations and contracts that are engaged by the Department of Education?
So given that we increase the amount of funding that's available for school transport virtually every year, the issue that I've increasingly seen playing a role is the availability of drivers, of their coaches to do this work. I have little doubt at all that we will see more money put into this area because we have done so for many other budgets. But the challenge that we do face is in an economy that's that nearly, that is indeed at full employment, if frankly not beyond full employment, is how we can get the drivers to do this work while at the same time Dublin Bus Air and the National Transport Authority need the same drivers to do other work.
I work 40 plus hours. I engage individuals who receive social welfare payments and work 19 and a half hours. Some of these individuals at the end of the week have a larger take-home pay packet than I have. While I support those that need assistance, it's wrong that it's better to be a social welfare recipient than in full-time job. I don't want to comment further on this, but I would like it discussed. The idea that you can work part-time and get social welfare, but you may end up better off than someone who's doing the full week's work.
And the particular reason as to why that is the case, as your listener has just pointed out there, Pat, is that by allowing people to work part-time while they also receive social welfare benefits or some social welfere benefits, the plan is then that that acts as a pathway into full-time employment. And we would rather have people working in some way than not at all if they're able to work. And by actually, for some people, being working part-time, it can help build up their skills to get them into full-time employment.
But when they're undergoing this process, which is admirable, they're taking home more pay than the full-time employee.
And the challenge is, though, is that then if we were to remove social welfare payments and social insurance for those people who are then in part-time employment, they could then end up being worse off at a time in which we want them to get back to part-time work and then full-time work. And for the vast majority of workers within our economy, though I accept not all, because of the way our tax code is structured, it does pay to be in work. And of course, by being in work, it then in turn helps with your ability to over time own a home, pay your rent and so
but
on.
But should that not be looked at, that situation? Because you can see why the guy is scandalised.
So we
side by side with people doing half the work and they end up with more pay.
We continually review it. And that is why in different budgets that we've done in the past, that myself and Jack Chambers have done, we've increased tax credits. We've made changes in relation to universal social charge. We've made changes in relation to the entry point for somebody paying the higher rate of income tax. But I just do want to reiterate the argument why we allow people to do some part-time work and retain much of their benefits. And the reason for that then is to help somebody who mightn't be working at all, to help them to be able to access full-time work in the future.
We have the most expensive electricity in Europe. The standing charges are robbing everyone. It's sinful, says Leo. And again and again on this program, we've tried to get to the bottom of why we have the most expensive electricity in Europe. You know, we have a huge amount of wind going in. We have an auction system which defies logic for the cost of power. On a nice windy day, you could even have more wind in the grid if the grid could take it. And yet the price doesn't fall, and it should.
And except the price of energy continues to be an issue, and the price of energy is also contributed to, as you've just said, Pat, by the fact that we're in the middle of a huge transition regarding where we get our energy from in Ireland. And we're on a pathway to trying to ensure that renewable energy plays a bigger role in meeting our energy
needs. Is it time to reform the auction, though?
So we are continually looking at what is the appropriate auction process for our country. And this is something the Minister, Dara O'Brien, is working on. But I do believe, I have to say, the auction process that we have in place at the moment is one that in the long term will serve us well.
Because you pay everyone the highest rate that's paid to the last person coming on the grid.
But that is because we need to have a procedure in place that incentivises as many bidders as possible participating in our auction process, so that over time we can build up the private sector capacity that we need to deliver the renewable energy potential that is there. And this is not an easy, and I accept, may not always be an affordable transition. But the goal that could be a few years away from Ireland, that we're getting more and more of our energy through renewable sources, will play a huge role in helping us meet our climate objectives, which are still there.
Do we know how much we pay for imported energy from nuclear France or nuclear Britain?
Pat, I'm afraid I can't give you an answer to that specific question.
Because that should impact on the price as well. If that's cheaper, which it should be from France, certainly, it should bring the whole market price down. But it doesn't, because of this last in gets the most money, and therefore everyone gets that money.
Well, I don't think the design of the auction process is going to be the overall determinant of where we are with energy pricing at the moment, because renewable energy still is not meeting a majority of our energy needs. A larger determinant of it is where we are with access in our energy, being an island off the west coast of Europe, which is why, again, in the long run, trying to become energy independent is the best way we have of influencing these issues.
This one says, I'm sick of this government. We were promised €200 creche fees. I have two kids full-time in creche. After the ECCE, the ECHE and the National Childcare Scheme, I'm paying €2,200 per month. I need to earn 48,000 a year just to pay that. Broken is an understatement.
So again, I very much appreciate that the cost of childcare, and for many more families, access to childcare continues to be a really big challenge. We haven't even done our first budget. The government never gave an indication during the election or otherwise that we could make progress to €200 in a single budget. And what we have done in particular in the last two budgets that we've done is we have made progress on affordability, and we've done it budget by budget. But I do have to bring it back to the overall bigger picture as well, which is that we do need to keep our public finances safe. We do need to ensure that decisions that we make budget by budget continue to be affordable, because if we try to do everything in a single budget, we end up doing something that will be unaffordable very quickly.
Last question from one of the listeners. When are they stopping the means testing of the carer's allowance? It's hard enough being a carer 24/7. We are always last on the list.
So we outlined what we want to do with regard to that in the programme for government, which is budget by budget. We aim to make progress in the income disregard for the carer's allowance, to then over time try to ensure that the carer's allowance is available to all, and the means testing in relation to it is wider. But I do again have to reiterate what I just said there a moment ago, that we do have to look at all of this in the round. We're all aware of the dangers and threats that are around our country and our economy at the moment, and we have to ensure that what we do is sustainable and keeps our country safe. And I'm so aware of the amazing work that our carers do, but to meet their needs in the long term, to be able to help them budget by budget, means for them, alongside with many other groups, there is an importance in keeping our public finances safe.
Minister Pascal Donoghue, thank you very much for joining us in the studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.